You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout. Welcome to another episode of the first quarter, your 12-minute coaching helper. I'm your host, Dan Jonker, and I am losing my voice today, but that's not going to stop us. This is episode number 37 of the podcast. As coaches, we can't just force our preferences and style onto a group of people. We need to adapt our playing style to match our players' strengths. In today's episode, we discuss why that works best in our experience and some specific playing styles that might match the types of strengths within your team. Let's get to it. You can follow along at coachcallstimeout.com/37. Brian, you've mentioned before that you kind of adapt your style or your team's style to what the player's strengths are instead of forcing them to just play your style at all times. I want to talk about the advantages of that. Why do you do that in the first place?
First of all, I have a preferred style of play. I mean, I like to play. 25 years ago, with my first high school teams, we played fast and we shot a lot of threes. I mean, we were shooting 30 threes a game 25 years ago. So I have a preferred style. I'd like to press, play up tempo, shoot the three. But the reality is, you don't always have the personnel that allows you to play your preferred style. So you have a choice. You can either force your preferred style on a group of individuals that might not be perfectly suited for it. Or as a coach, you can adapt to the personnel that you have and try and keep people in positions to succeed by allowing them to do the things that they're most comfortable with and potentially, again, allowing you to have more success that way. So if I'm changing my preferred style, it's because my personnel doesn't suit that style. And I've had to do that over the years, for sure.
Okay, so throughout the year, do you kind of work on players' strengths, or do you try to come back to your style a little bit? And maybe you like to shoot a lot of threes. Let's say you have a team that isn't a great shooting team. Throughout that year, are you trying to make them a better shooting team so they'll be closer to your style and you'll be more comfortable? Or are you just work on your strengths for that year?
When you're trying to improve your skill set as a player or as a coach trying to improve player skill sets, you are working on weaknesses. So, yes, you will. If they're poor shooting, then you're going to work on shooting throughout the year. But it won't necessarily be at the expense of, you know, making your system not to the level that you hoped it would. So, yes, I would continue to work on those things that people need work on. But I wouldn't necessarily do it with the mindset to get to changing the system necessarily. I guess part of that, you've got to be able to identify what your player's strengths are and collectively as a group what their strengths are going to be, right?
Yeah.
And the sooner you can identify that, then the sooner you can put together a plan for how you think you're best suited to play.
So when does your plan come into place? After a couple of weeks of tryouts and practices and that kind of thing? Or do you get a pretty good sense before the year? Let's say not your college team. Let's say you're coaching youth basketball.
I mean, Brady, you can answer that. When we had our youth girls, you don't always know the skill sets of the players that you have or that are trying out. So, yeah, you know, it might take time to figure out what the best way to play is.
You have to try different things out in practice, and you're going to find some things seem like they're working in practice. And the second you get into a game, it doesn't work nearly as well as it was in practice. Sometimes it's because you've got, you know, your five best players playing against your back half, and it looks all fine and dandy in practice. And as soon as you put them against five more skilled players on another team, it doesn't work well. So you got to go back to the drawing board. That's why playing some exhibition games at the start of the season is always beneficial to the team. One other thing I found when we were coaching the girls, and it was more other teams, we didn't do it as much, but as soon as we got to the age where man-to-man defense wasn't required and you could play zone defense and you could stay off your man, I found a lot of teams just, if they didn't have the talent, they just stuck to zone. And it's not very beneficial for the girls to just be standing there playing zone defense all the time when they're you know, 11, 12, 13 years old, and then they get to high school, and a lot of teams don't run zone defense. It's not a common thing, but I found it to be very common with the teams in grades 7 and 8, and I don't think you learn a lot doing that. So I think you also have to be able to adapt your coaching style in a way that you have to remember, especially in the youth ages, that you're trying to teach them skills, not just win games all the time, and that's important as well.
I agree. We can do the podcast episode on that as well. The zone defense for youth is a terrible idea. It doesn't even work. Look at Syracuse, and now Duke plays a lot of zone. The guys who are in the NBA can't play defense and play for those schools anymore. It's just the principles are gone. But anyways, that'll be for another episode.
I won't go that far, but I do believe that the zone defense is the most polarizing subject in youth basketball.
Yeah.
And it's worth it. It's worth an entire podcast.
Yeah. So let's jump into some specifics for youth coaches. Let's say you have a whole whack of guards, no post players. What specifically would you be looking into, Brady?
I think you'd have to be looking at playing a little bit more of an up-tempo style of game. Hopefully, you know, you have 8 or 9 girls, 10 girls, and you can and run them all out on the court together and make constant subs. And I'd look to
not at the same time. Though.
Yeah, if you got no, if you got 10, time, you shouldn't lose.
You can't put them out there at the same time.
No, I just switching them out.
Some referees would frown upon that. There might be some refs that won't catch it, but most would frown upon it.
Yeah, wow, well, you could try. But yeah, I'd look at, you know, running a system where you're run and gun with a lot of pressure and on ball defense.
Lots of penetrate kick, work on shooting, front the bigs on defense, that kind of thing. Make the post passes difficult on defense so you're not at a disadvantage.
You could even go to a lot more half court trapping stuff and get after people that way. Any way you can to increase the tempo of the game. And to hopefully create more turnovers, because you're probably going to lose a rebounding battle.
Okay, let's go with bigs. What if you're loaded with post players? Bri, what would
you're
you
screwed.
Look to do? Yeah.
What would you're
you
screwed.
Do? You are, yes.
I get that question sometimes. People say, well, if you had a choice, would you take dominant post play and poor guard play, or adequate guard play and no posts? And I'd always choose the guards. At least you can get the ball up the floor and you can do some things.
Yeah.
It's hard if your post can't get the ball. But to your question, if you had more posts, you're going to have to run more of a kind of an old school. We have sets we call big, where we're looking to go high-low. So we'll post, we'll screen away to a flashing guy to the high post, and if he catches, then you're looking for the seal down, so you have two posts essentially playing high-low off each other. We would do something like that. We would also potentially run, even 4 outs and look for the mismatch. If you've got a number of post guys, you're probably going to have some mismatches somewhere where some smaller guards are matched against them, so maybe you can exploit some of those things if you go 4 out. But yeah, you'd have to work a lot on passing and interior passing in particular. Sometimes there's situations where you have even slower guards, if you have an entire team of shooting, then, what do you work on? I think you work on dribble drives, kicks, so you've got passing, you've got circular motion on the perimeter, where when you have guys attacking, you have other guys coming behind them with their feet set at the perimeter. You work on long rebounding, offensive rebounding in particular, off long rebounds, because you're going to have more lengthy rebounds with the longer shots.
Let's say you have a whole whack of guards and only one of them can shoot. What are you going to do then?
I think then you got to try and again use penetration with those guards. Hopefully, if they can't shoot, they are able to get to the rim or to get by people, and you got to take advantage, space the floor, and try and get to the rim as much as possible.
Yeah, create as many two-on-one, little mini two-on-one, three-on-two scenarios. Teach that kind of stuff. Where's the advantage when you beat your opponent?
Yeah, we're constantly right now trying to emphasize and stop with our young guys, because I got 10 freshmen. We're constantly stopping and working on things in practice, or explaining in practice the concepts of 2-on-1 and 3-on-2s and how easily you can create them in a half-court offense. But it's recognizing them and not going away from them that's hard to teach. Guys instinctively just they put their head down and dribble, or they pass out of situations where, I'll stop and say, look at, you just had a position here where a defender had to make a decision between you and someone else. That's a 2-on-1.
Yeah. So we got to find a way to exploit. If that defender comes to you, you pass. If they don't, then
that's
shoot.
Right.
You keep going until they stop you.
It's very simple to say, and it's simple when you're on the sidelines if that's what you're watching and you're aware of. And it's simple to show in video as well. But when they're actually out there, it's critical thinking or decision making is extremely important, if not the most important skill that someone can have. We don't do enough of it. So
one thing I want to emphasize to all coaches, you're only one person. To expect an entire team of kids to adjust to your way in 3 or 4 months is unrealistic, and it's also a little bit selfish. To get the best out of your players, you need to adapt your style to suit them. If you want to add to this discussion, just leave us a comment at coachcallstimeout.com/37. If you like what you heard today, please share it with another coach, and while you're at it, let them know about coachcallstimeout.com. We have over 200 free plays, drills, practice plans, and tips for coaches of all ages and all skill levels. We have lots of plays for teams with 4 or even 5 guard lineups, or teams with 2 great post players. We have it all. Just go to coachcallstimeout.com and check it out. We'll be back next Monday with another coaching-related issue. We'll see you then.